Hello and welcome to the Cannon Fodder Podcast. I'm Daniel Barnes, film critic emeritus, maybe? I think I've hit the emeritus phase of my career. You know, I've kind of crossed that bridge. With me, as always, man, this guy. You want to talk famous rocks throughout history? Plymouth Rock, Rock of Gibraltar, Rock of Ages, The Rock, the Michael Bay film, and this guy, Corky fucking McDonald. You want to talk? You open this guy up. I'm telling you, you got igneous. There's shale in there. There's all sorts of things going on. It is. He's sedimentary when he wants to be. When he feels like it, he just sort of kind of rests in those layers like that. Most of the time, he's just out there crushing it. His name's Corky McDonald. What's going on, buddy?
What's happening? Now, emeritus means you're on your way out, right? Like, this is your last, this is your swan song.
Oh, yeah.
So, you're a critic emeritus.
This is it.
Is there something you're not telling me?
I feel like I've been on my way out. Almost since the beginning.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's from cradle to grave, you go.
Hello, I must be going.
I'm just crossing over into the official phase.
I get you.
You know, no more waffling on the emeritus. I am emeritus.
I was born in, it was kind of an Irish goodbye situation. Like, just the second you're born, one day you're just going to quietly duck out. Just like, hey, you all were warned.
Just. Yeah. You don't need to tell anybody about it, right? They're all doing a thing. Perfect time to just kind of slip out.
It's because I don't want to embarrass you. No one needs to know. That's what it is. I leave so I don't embarrass you. You know? It's not that I'm bad.
Exactly.
It's not
tact.
That I'm socially awkward.
No. No, right? No. I'm socially maladroit. Never. Never. It's obviously your problem and always has been and always will be. Corky, speaking of things we just can't get over, I want to revisit a film. Actually, you wanted to revisit this film. It's a movie we talked about actually last year, a movie called Fires on the Plain. It was my slighted offering in place of Paisan, Roberto Rossellini's World War II film, episode 51. That was back in December of 2025. Fires on the Plain, directed by Japanese filmmaker Kon Ichikawa, released in 1959. I'll read the IMDb synopsis. In the closing days of World War II, remnants of the Japanese army in Leyte are abandoned by their command and face certain death by starvation. Like I say, this was my slighted offering, but you had not seen the film, so you sort of filed it away, kind of tucked it away in your little folder that you have there. It's not a briefcase. It's not a purse, but it's like
it's
it has
got
a thing
Pendaflex.
That kind of opens up. You put files in it. Exactly. Whatever the name of it. It's your bureau. What do you call that? And it's not important. But my point is that you did actually catch up with Fires on the Plain recently. It's still up for canonization. And so I'm really interested to hear what you think about the film.
G-R-I-M.
Oh, boy.
When you think movie can't get grimmer, it gets grimmer.
All right. The brothers Grimm were like, forget it. Forget it. We were going to have a third brother,
we
were going to be
like
triplets.
Third property
and
brother.
We just ate them.
You think innocents can't die. You think like people are going to pull through. You think people won't eat each other. You think people won't eat their feces. You think you think people won't just willy-nilly like be on the cusp of rescue and then just get mowed down by someone who had obviously been wronged at some time. And I loved the ever-present smoke in the horizon. Like, there's heaven. There's perfection. We're going to get there. We're just got to get right over this next hill. And it never comes. And it never comes. And it never will. And even if you, if this guy that we follow, this actor who puts in such a performance as we watch him waste away into madness and starvation and dysentery. If this guy and TB, and he's saying we meet him, he's got TB. Jesus.
Right. No, he is. he's marked for death the moment this movie begins. He's basically told, like, you have TB.
Kill yourself.
We're not going to give you any treatment. You should go and kill yourself, right? Like, that would be the best move. And it's like, that's not the worst advice he gets in this entire movie either, right? Like, it's just, it's a brutal, brutal.
But performances are great. The look is fantastic. Definitely a sound selection. One I'm glad you recommended, and I'm glad I got to spend time with.
Oh, good. Yeah, Ichikawa is really kind of one of the great under-heralded world directors. He's nowhere to be found on this Sight and Sound list. I have a full spreadsheet that tells every single film that got a vote and how many votes, and none of his films got more than 2 votes. He also made The Burmese Harp, which is a really great film, Odd Obsession, Tokyo Olympiad. Many other great films, very visionary in his own way. Fires on the Plain in the Sight and Sound poll got 1 vote. 1 vote. That is the same number of votes received by Meet Joe Black, Ted 2, and Big Mama's : Like Father, Like Son. All got 1 vote, just like Fires on the fucking
criminal
plane. That is it. That's just criminal madness. Absolute insanity. It's crazy, like, some of these votes, they vastly expanded the pool of people for this 2022 poll, and there are like 4,500 films that got a vote, at least 1 vote, right? And it's just crazy, like, some of these movies, like, you really thought that was gonna make the top 10? You know, no, probably not. But I'm so glad that you saw Fires on the Plain. I agree that it is just, it's an amazing film. It's one I saw during the pandemic, and it's really, really stuck with me ever since for obvious reasons. And I kind of put it up there with, like, Come and See.
Yes, yes.
As kind of its own sort of portrait of, like, brutality, you know, during the war. And it's really harsh. It's a very harsh film, but also it's really worth the trip. Like, if you're going to go through something like that, you should know that, like, you're in the hands of a great filmmaker who is, like, and you're going to see something pretty profound, and you get it.
I don't know if you've ever played Red Dead Redemption or Red Dead Redemption 2, but it's like Red Dead side quest, but somehow, like, more twisted.
Oh, my God. Right? I know. That's it. Really is. Really is, yeah. Okay, so it sounds like we got 2 votes for Fires on the Plain, and that is the 81st film to hit the cannon fodder Not bad. Not bad. We're over almost a third of the way to 250. I mean, that's A-okay in my book. Speaking of Big Mama's : Like Father, Like Son, I really feel that our PayPal supporters are truly Big Mamas, and they are like fathers, and we are like sons. Now, that's just me talking. That's just me going off script there. But before we get into this week's film, we did want to take a moment to thank our PayPal supporters. We honestly could not do this show without you, and if you would like to donate to the show, by golly, it's pretty easy. You just head over to daredaniel.com. You find the menu at the top of the page. It's usually, if it's on your phone, you got 3 little lines there. Find support the show. Support the show. Any contribution, honestly, anything that you've got, any spare change helps keep this show going. IMDb synopsis for Born in Flames. Set 10 years after the most peaceful revolution in United States history, it presents a dystopia in which the issues of many groups, minorities, liberals, gay rights organizations, feminists, are dealt with by the government. Born in Flames was Borden's first feature, shot and edited over 5 years for $30,000, completed in 1983. She used non-professional actors, including a rare on-screen role from fellow painter and New York no-wave contemporary, Catherine Bigelow. Yes, that Catherine Bigelow. She's in the movie. Born in Flames was shot in a collage-like, often pseudo-documentary style. It's often described as a sci-fi film, but it's not set in an alternate future. It's actually set in an alternate present, a socialist democratic United States that is celebrating the 10th anniversary of its peaceful socialist revolution. But we see that very little has changed in this world, especially for women, for gays, and minorities. The film premiered February 20, 1983. It won the Reader Prize at the 1983 Berlin International Film Festival, or BIFF. Doesn't seem like it got much of a release or made much money. Contemporary reviews were not harsh, but kind of dismissive, and Borden's post-Born in Flames career was a bit disappointing. She made Working Girls, set in a Manhattan brothel, a film that both me and Quirky have seen and like, but she had a disastrous time on the erotic thriller Love Crimes and would go on to do TV movies, Red Shoe Diaries episodes, and various script doctoring jobs. But as we've seen, give a film time and the culture often catches up. In 2016, the Anthology Film Archives screened a 35mm restoration print of Born in Flames, and Borden traveled the world presenting and talking about the film. Finally, in 2016, the climate was right. The audience was ready. Criterion Channel gave it heavy promotion when it premiered in, I believe, 2018. Born in Flames, the time had come at last, and sure enough, in 2022, the Sight and Sound poll, it tied with 22 other films for that final spot in the top, quote-unquote, 250 at number 43. Corky, in the film, one of the lines I've seen quoted the most is this really great line about how poor people have a right to there's a right to violence for poor people, mm-hmm. and there's also a right to pee. But the important thing is it needs to be the right place, the right time, and the appropriate situation. I think you could like apply that to Born in Flames, as I was just saying. Like, it wasn't the right time in 1983, crazily enough, right? Because like, it seems like it was the right time. But it wasn't. It kind of came and went and didn't make much of an impression. But when it came out in 2016, man, mwah, perfect time for this movie to come out again, find its audience. The audience was primed. Everything was right. Is it time, Corky, for this film to not just enter the world canon, but to enter the very, very exclusive, very specialized canon that is the Cannon Fodder canon?
This is one of the most prescient movies I've seen in a long time. Also, Luscious Jackson has been playing in my head. Mm. Daughters of the Chaos. Just this movie screams Luscious Jackson, Daughters of the Chaos to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, that kind of 90s. This is like women were taking over rock and roll in the 90s.
Taking right? over rock, and it's a pastiche of a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
You know, it's funk beats, rock, disco.
Absolutely.
You know, this movie does a lot of things wrong, and that's not always pejorative. Mm-hmm. It does things in a way where I've seen it in other movies be like, Jesus, what are they doing here? Or I've seen it in this movie and I'm like, I'll forgive it. I'll forgive it a little bit in this movie. It worked for me overall. There's a lot of repeated, you know, scenes. There's a lot of explaining the scene you just saw before. You don't really know who anybody is mm-hmm. at any given time to start a scene. You just kind of got to figure shit out as it goes along. And it can get repetitive, but the guerrilla style of it, the fly on the wall of a lot of different motivations and different disparate groups acting on the same information, but interpreting and using it differently, I found compelling. I love the way they just apparently just hopped out of their car and shot some shit and then got back in their car and, you know, took off to where other people are like, what's happening here right now? But then again, there's a cohesive enough story for me to follow along. And also, I'm usually Mr. Like, I like actors. Like, I would rather see some acting in this one. I loved the non-traditional, non-professional acting so much that when I saw someone acting, I was like, ugh, get Eric Bogosian out of here.
It felt artificial, right? Yeah, yeah. Like, you're just like, you're too slick. You're making a face. It's too acty.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I mentioned at the beginning, like the media collage, like nature of the film, which is very, I think, very of its time. You know, kind of going back to Videodrome a little bit as well. But also ahead of its time, I think. And it's rough, as you said. It's definitely a first movie. It's definitely a labor of love. But man, it just has so much like urgency and creativity mm-hmm. and life to it as well. Apparently, like Lizzie Borden, she would just work, save up some money, and when she got enough money, she would get people out and say, let's go out and shoot. She'd shoot for a few hours or for a day or two, and then when she ran out of money, she'd start all over again, go make some more money, and then come back to it. And that sort of, I think, explains the uncentered nature of the film, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we do have a couple of main characters, but they're not developed really as people. They're more developed as kind of like avatars and sort of symbol. They represent these different schools of thought, these different methods of political action. They're not really developed as characters. Instead, we're getting this like really dizzying collage, this mixed media, like fake news reports, pirate radio broadcasts, like punk and no wave bands, surveillance images and like just it's a really mix of like styles and some stuff looks really good and then some stuff mm-hmm. looks really really rough, you know, and some things they were obviously like the scenes of the World Trade Center, they were not permitted to shoot at the World Trade Center. I can guarantee you that, like, there's no fucking way. But it's a fascinating film. It's a stretch, as I said, to call this a sci-fi film because it's set in the dystopian present, not the dystopian future. But I think like all great sci-fi films, no matter how far in the future, past, whatever they're sent, they're really about their own time, right? This film is commenting on the reality of its time, which unfortunately is also the reality of our time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like nothing's changed. That I think is the message of the film. And I think that's what resonated is that like, we're in this alternate universe where the United States has become a socialist democracy, right? And it's been 10 years. And it was not a violent revolution. It was just a simple, like, everyone decided, we want to be socialists now. All that's good. Nothing has changed, really.
Right.
Nothing has changed. And that is, like, the kind of relevant thing that I think kind of resonated with audiences is that, like, no matter what, fascist, like, dictatorship, socialist democracy, like socialist republic, democracy, whatever, like our society is just not safe for women, right? They're in danger from men, they're in danger from the media, they're in danger from their government, they're not safe on the street, at home, they're not safe at work. And just going with the party line, which is the kind of like imperative that is put on a lot of the women in this film, think about the party over people. That doesn't change anything. The essentials of like the rot at a heart of our society does not really change. And I think that's like what stays so relevant about this film.
I really loved a part where, like you said, we follow surveillance. We follow the government, the sneaky government actors who try to infiltrate and co-opt the movement and crush it. They cannot even understand how a woman-based organization is works. Like, they're not hierarchical. Like, what, they rotate out? So wait, huh? People share responsibilities? Like, I loved that scene where they're even drawing a diagram and they cannot figure it out. The two men,
they got like this wheel and like it's really good. No, and there's a lot of really good just male talking head nonsense, which again is like, man, we are no further along, really, at all. The hairstyles have changed, but that's about it.
The programs that are ostensibly to be for the betterment and protection of women are really keeping you in your place. Like, well, we want you to be safe. We don't want you in the unions. We want you to be safe. It's like, no, we just don't want you in the unions. You don't get equal pay for equal work. We're going to pay women to be, you know, to be housewives. It's like, okay, like, you've shut them out of other fields. Now you're making one field pay. And then, of course, that's very relevant to our times. Like, I think in 83, that would have been like, man, could you believe if it ever got like that?
Oh, sure.
And then, like, now we're closer to like that than they were then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And all of the, pretty much all of the newscasters we see, everyone holding a microphone is a man. The women are getting their message out through
guerrilla
pirate
radio
and through performances and through eventually, like, you know, acts of resistance and finally acts of terrorism, you know,
the white intelligentsia allies women, they have to pitch to a man who shuts down.
Yeah, exactly. Who says, you get to do whatever you want, and then as soon as they do whatever they want, they're fired.
Yeah.
And they're very waffly. Anyway, this is where Catherine Bigelow, she plays one of the
Catherine Bigelow.
The hot one.
But yeah, you're right. They're not... They'd rather just debate the shit. It reminded me
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no action there. No action.
Yes. Mm-mm. It reminded me of in Bicycle Thieves when he gets told to see the revolutionaries and they're just performers underground. Like, they're not really doing anything. They're just performing. Or another bit reminded me of Samba Zanga she's told... we follow this side story of this man and this woman who are in the resistance, and the guy's just about screwing all the women. Like, he's supposed to be an ally, but he's just using the position to be like, yeah, I'm gonna score chicks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, you know, as we said, like, there are characters, you know, there is sort of a plot, and the story, if you want it, is sort of actually about like these competing feminist groups. There's these sort of like subdivisions of feminist groups, right? So we have, like, as you said, the white feminists are on like the Young Socialist Review paper, you know, that's like your mainstream white feminist. You have like black woman, and she's at her podcast, and then you have the white woman who does poetry and is in a band, and they all kind of have these, like, they all want the same thing, but they just have kind of slightly different approaches. They're kind of just held back by, like, you know, rhetoric and, you know, kind of very small differences. And the movie is eventually about, like, kind of how they, almost through no choice whatsoever, they come together, right? They're both courted by this militant feminist group called the Women's Army. And that's sort of what this is about. It's about them eventually coming together and realizing, like, there's no way to, like, get past this if we don't come together. So it has a pretty simple message, but it is, like, a really... as I said, passionate, really energetic, and very engaged movie.
And even in the Women's Army, there's kind of a Lenin Trotsky thing with the two leads. One is getting more and more militant, and the other is she's just as committed but she's more about the outreach and talking it, you know, and now is not the time. We never get the, you know, denouement with those two, but a movie shot over 5 to 6 years, maybe some people weren't available to fully flesh out the original vision.
There's
going to
be some holes there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that, I mean, in a way that actually works for the film, you know what I mean? That it doesn't, like, wrap things up in a nice little bow. It has, like, that kind of punk energy of, like, we're here to kind of, like, you know, spit in the face of the system, not to necessarily fix the system, you know, or tell you how to fix the system. So again, I think it was a really excellent film. That said, here's my knock on Born in Flames. Besides the obvious that, as we said, that it's a rough film, that it's... I feel like I could have got a lot of what the movie was going for without maybe 10,000 didactic speeches delivered straight to camera. As I've made clear many times on this podcast, on our previous podcasts, in the written word, like, if you don't need to explain it, don't explain it, you know? So that the film has this wonderful energy. And I love it. I loved it, but really just kept wearing me down with just like an kind of overall overinflated kind of self-importance. But I mean, I think that's sort of part of, like, you know, radicals and revolutionaries and things like that. But yeah, it was not canon worthy for me personally, mainly for that reason, was that I feel like it could have been a little more cinematic. And I do think that Working Girls, even though it doesn't have that same like collage, like nature, kind of explores its themes. Well, that's a very talky movie, but without necessarily explaining them. So kind of obviously, so that is my kind of one knock, and that's why I think it's probably not going to go into the canon for me.
Gotcha. It's a knock for me too, as I stated, like a lot of repetitive showing you, and then we just get a recap of what we just showed you. And
yeah,
I could have inferred those motivations, or I could infer that person's speech that they've told again. I didn't find it as an obstruction to canonization. I thought there were enough varied voices mm-hmm. doing it that it worked for me.
Yeah. No, and I think that was, again, the appeal of the film to me was like the varying of the voices and all the different point of views that you were getting. But it was just like listening to speeches, and that's just not what I want to do.
We're having a real women's army moment here.
Oh boy. Right. Yeah. I'm getting caught up on a technicality, and meanwhile, yep. the revolution suffered.
I want to go on.
Corky, anything else you wanted to bring up before we officially rate this thing and move along?
I love movies from this time period that mm-hmm. shot like this in New York.
Yeah,
I
mean, me too.
We've talked about this before, being nostalgic for a time and place, or at least a place you never were. But
yeah,
it's like. Just the fact that they could do it and then they did do it. And it's just something that will never can be captured again that way.
Very truly. Right. Like you can try to, you know, be the Joker or like try to do it with art direction and special effects and stuff like that. But man, the gritty, just often horrible reality of it all is just like,
yeah,
it is very, very fascinating, and I'd love to see films about New York from that period at that kind of street level point of view. And I will say, little teaser here, that will come up in my slighted pick. Did you have a favorite scene or a character or a line or anything that you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I liked the short little singer who kept coming back.
Mm.
You could tell time passed with her because her hair was always different.
Right, I mean, I know. Yeah, it's like, this is 3 years later.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4.
And I like the music that they played too. Guilty as charged. I was into it.
It's like punk no wave music from New York, late 70s, early 80s, but also Staple Singers. It's like Billie Holiday, I think, as well, right?
There was a lot of good women voices in there. I can't think of any others.
Yeah, it's a really good eclectic soundtrack, kind of Tuki Buki like in that way, which had a lot of just fascinating music. Sometimes felt oddly discordant, like in terms of like image and sound, but like fucking A, it also just works so, like, sometimes that just works so well, you know. So Corky, let's remind everyone about how we rate these films. We rate, of course, on the slight or sound scale. If we both think that it was a sound selection, then kaboom, the cannons roar, and right into the cannon fodder cannon it goes. Bypasses the permit process. Any kind of state board of equalization, they don't need to get involved in any of this kind of stuff. No, it goes right in there. It is just boom, just past the Smoot Hawley, no tariffs, off it goes. However, if one or both of us think it was a wee bit slight, no canon for you, but we will both select a slighted movie, not in the Sight and Sound 250, to put in its place. Corky, Born in Flames, slight or sound?
It is the sound of the streets. It is the sound of a new America. Ooh. It is the sound of revolution. Yeah, I've found this to be a sound movie well worth into our canon of 250.
Righteous, man. However, here comes Whitey. Here comes uh-oh. Whitey. Yep, he's got his finger out. He's waggling it in your face. He's saying, well, I just don't think that this was a prudent choice for the canon, and I'm doing my white guy voice right now. That is my normal voice. Never mind. So no canon for Born in Flames. This is a two key situation, so I gotta be the one to be the fucking asshole.
There's a reason they call him Dan the Man Barnes, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, because he's the man.
I am the man. You know what's fascinating now, Corky, is that so I've recently put together a spreadsheet, and I've actually cataloged all of our slider sound picks and, you know, how often. So there's like I said, it's a two-key situation. So there's three ways that a film that we can review and it is slighted, right? We both pick it.
Yep.
Or you say it's slight, or I say it's slight, right? It's one guy or the other guy or both guys. Those are the ways. With this slighted pick, this slight pick by me, there are 27 films of the now 69 that we've reviewed that have got the slighted.
Okay.
9-9-9. Exactly. Wow. 9-9-9. Yes, with this, it was 9-8-9. And now it's 9-9-9. I mean, it's amazing. It's like us, we keep going further and further out, and these numbers like stay exactly the same. It's just like 65% chance that it will be in the canon, and equal odds that it'll be you, me, or both of us. Fascinating stuff. Or not.
Crazy.
You can get it. But I do have a slighted pick to put in its place. And as I was saying, one of the things that struck you and struck me about Born in Flames was that late 70s, early 80s, New York City street level energy. This is a movie on the streets, in the streets, and of the streets. Does a great job of capturing that real New York of the era. It's obvious, like I said, that she was shooting mostly with no permits, no professionals. It's very neorealist style over here, right? Like it's, and much like you, late 70s, early 80s portraits of that grimy, gritty, pre-Giuliani, Basquiat era New York. Love them. And I tell you what, your cinematic cup runneth over. So much to choose from. And so many films, shockingly, not in the Sight and Sound top 250. For example, you mentioned it earlier, Network. Network's a film I certainly thought of when I was
crazy.
Absolutely. It has same head prescient thing, same news, same idea about like who creates these images, who creates these identities. How about Dog Day Afternoon? Not in the Sight and Sound top 250, but another film, really, really street level energy. And it has a queer aspect to it as well. And of course, one of my personal favorites is The Warriors, which is sort of like the comic book take on that era as well. But the one film that really struck out to me as the perfect substitute for Born in Flames, well, to me, it's the perfect substitute. For anybody else, they would just think I'm a psychopath, but there you go. But to me, the perfect substitute for the canon is Abel Ferrara's 1981 revenge classic, Ms. 45. Film stars Zoe Lund as a young mute woman who works in the garment district of New York City in its nightmare heyday. It's an escape from New York era. After getting raped twice in one day, our heroine Thana kills her second assailant and eventually reinvents herself as a gun-toting, avenging angel and media sensation. She takes down first the most toxic of men, rapists and pimps and so forth, and finally, every man, because really, you're splitting hairs. It's set in the same city, same era as Born in Flames, and Ms. 45 is a feminist film in its own exploitative way, but while Born in Flames, as I said, often feels like a debate between pretentious grad school pedants, because that's kind of what it is, Ms. 45 is truly disturbing, unsettling, provocative material. In a way, it's everything Born in the Flames is against, especially the depictions of violence against women. But the interesting thing I think about Ms. 45 is that it's almost designed to get exactly the men it's portraying, exploitative, violent, misogynists, to cheer for their on-screen counterparts to get blown away. It gets men to root for their own annihilation. I mean, that's some subversive shit right there. And for all its guts and gusto, Born in Flames is a little more polite and even, I think, kind of comforting for certain audiences. It's a big debate, but not Ms. 45. No debating in Ms. 45. It's all action and guts and lack of glory. But it's a great film. Have you seen it, Quirky?
I have not. I've heard of it, but I have not seen it.
If you would like to catch up with this film, if you haven't seen it, or maybe it's been a while, you can watch it for free on Canopy. Canopy with a K. You can get that through your local library, hopefully. Also available for rent on all your usual VOD services. Really great early Abel Ferrara film.
That's what we thought about Born in Flames, but what did you think about it? Did you watch it with us? Had you seen it before? We'd love to hear your take on the film. Leave us a comment on your favorite podcast app or contact us on Facebook and Instagram at Dare Down Your Pod. Tell us your thoughts.
This is normally the part of the show where we would select the film randomly that we're going to review in 2 weeks on our next episode. But the film we'll review in 2 weeks is not going to be random at all. It is actually a request, an urgent special request from one of our PayPal supporters. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why you support the show, DareDaniel.com.
Yes, it is.
Support the show in the menu. You can do it. But that film, special request, is Casablanca, 1942, directed by Michael Curtiz, stars Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman, Paul Henry, Dooley Wilson, Claude Rains, Sidney Greenstreet, Peter Lorre. Oh my God, it just keeps going.
Right?
This was a special request actually from my dad. We had, it was just a couple episodes, I think it was, the Tuki Buki episode that we had a few films that we thought, you know, why wait? We've seen these films. We've seen them probably multiple times, several times for me, Casablanca, 5, 10 times probably. Why are we going to wait on this and North by Northwest and Psycho? But then my dad comes back and is like, I actually want to hear you guys talk about Casablanca. I forgot that it's actually my dad's favorite movie. So, Dad, aww, you are in luck, and this is a special late birthday present for you.
Happy birthday, Walter.
I got him other presents, so don't think this is the only present and that it's 2 months late. So it's good. We're good. Okay? The obligations are obligated. All right. IMDb synopsis of Casablanca, if you don't know. A cynical expatriate American cafe owner struggles to decide whether or not to help his former lover and her fugitive husband escape the Nazis in French Morocco. Well, give the whole thing away, why don't you? No, I'm excited to watch this thing. It's actually been way too long. I said I've seen it so many times that I felt very, very comfortable putting this in the canon. But it's actually been a while since I've just sat down and watched Casablanca. So I'm really excited to do that.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in at least 30 years.
Oh, so, fucking A. Well, this is going to be exciting. So that's all we have for you on this week's episode. Join us in 2 weeks when we'll be reviewing Casablanca. If you're interested in playing along at home, the movie is available to watch on HBO Max. Watch TCM. Shows all the time on Turner Classic Movies. It's also available to rent on all your usual VOD services. Until then, follow Dare Daniel Pod on Facebook and Instagram. Like and rate us on your favorite podcast app. If you would like to donate to the show, visit daredaniel.com. Find support the show in the menu. Do it. And then you can just boss us around and tell us to review this or that or the other. And we'll be powerless to stop you. You can also look for the donate button. If you're a fan of new movies, listen to me review the top films of the day on Single Take with me. For Cannon Fodder, I'm me. And I'm also Daniel. Oh, Corky jumped back into the last second there. Corky's himself. I'm myself. And until next time, save us a seat in the back row. Bye-bye.